suggestion that was made. All right, shalom, everybody. So there was a suggestion that was made a number of weeks ago that we take some time to focus a little bit on the concepts and the halachos of Lashon Hara, which, as we know, is an area that's both very challenging, just in terms of practice, is very complicated in terms of rules and in terms of the ideas, and that just like everything else that we try to pay attention to over the course of the year, this is an area where maybe giving a little bit of particular focus to some of these more complicated concepts will help us have an enhanced sensitivity. So the suggestion was to try it once a month, and maybe to try it here at this time because we have lunch at the same time and the like. So we're definitely open to feedback about all those details about timing and format and all those related issues. But this is how we're starting off. So there are a lot of topics within Lashon Hara, but it seems like first and foremost, maybe for today, we should try to define our terms and define our concepts. And I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about what's going on with Lashon Hara, and it leads to a lot of problems. It leads to sometimes holding back when we shouldn't, and it leads to, even when we have a general sense of where we want to go, a lot of mystification about what exactly is it that the Torah is trying to regulate here. If something is true, why is it bad for me to say it? And if something is relevant, then how do we assess that? How do we assess how that should come up? And what do we mean when we talk about Kabbalah Lashon Hara as a concept, which is a particularly challenging concept to understand, because especially if we're talking about true items, it sounds like we're saying that we just started. We haven't said anything yet. We're just introducing what we're doing. Okay. Get Sakar Sato for the whole idea. Okay, so we're probably going to go to around 12:45. Is that what we announced? Okay, so you ready? Okay, so we're saying, first mentioning some of the questions, just what exactly is the whole relationship of truth and falsehood as far as Lashon Hara is concerned? And if we are talking about forbidding true statements, how does that make sense to us? And how do we draw a balance between not hurting people with the aver of Lashon Hara and not allowing people to be hurt because we're too slow to say something that needs to be said? So today, let's just try to figure out our terms, our sources. So what do we know? We know that there is clearly some tremendous avera called Lashon Hara. And we know that because at least Chazal, in so many places, give it a tremendous attention. Both hashkafically, as a theme, as an avera, which seems to be blamed for just about everything. Like going back to Adam HaRishon, literally, the Gemara says that Nachash spoke Lashon Hara about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And going up until Adi Yom HaZeh, that our continued Golus is tied down to Lashon Hara. The Chafetz Chaim explains in his Hakdama that he considers Sinas Chinam and Lashon Hara to essentially refer to the same thing. So if we say that we are still in Golus because of Sinas Chinam, it's a reference to Lashon Hara. So this is the Avera which takes us all the way from the beginning of history till now as the cause for almost all of our problems. So Chazal give a tremendous amount of attention to it. Even though it's a little bit of a quirk, we'll have to maybe figure this out, in the Shulchan Aruch, it doesn't have a section. And that has provoked a lot of discussion why that is. Why is it that if you open up the Shulchan Aruch, you don't have any simen or any area at all about Lashon Hara? What you have is the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham in Aruch Chaim, Hilchos Masu Matan, has one statement there where he throws in a lot of concepts which are mentioned in Shas, which don't get a place in Shulchan Aruch. So the Magen Avraham puts Lashon Hara there also, but you would expect, especially Lashon Hara, there's a lot of details, and there's no room for it in that Magen Avraham. Kuf Nun Zayin. So you don't find details there. So in Shulchan Aruch, it's missing, and that's a discussion why. But everywhere before and after, it's very heavy. So in Shas, it gets a lot of attention, including a lot of halachic attention. We don't have a Masechta of Lashon Hara, but we have some very significant halachic sugyas about Lashon Hara. Most of the statements about Lashon Hara, or let's say the most concentrated place of statements about Lashon Hara in Bavli, in Shas Bavli, is the middle of Erechin, around Daf Tezvav, clustered around there. In the Yerushalmi, in the beginning of Maseches Peah, there are a number of statements there about Lashon Hara. So that's as close as you get to a Masechta of Lashon Hara, those sections of Shas. But in addition to those places, in Maseches Shabbos, there's some important passages, not just Agadic passages, but important Halacha Lamaisa passages about Lashon Hara, where you have sugyas with Rishonim, with major issues. In Maseches Nida, there's an important passage. So we definitely have sugyas in Shas that have significant discussions among the Rishonim. It's a question why it's not in Shulchan Aruch. That's something that there are suggestions. But everywhere else, it's a very major presence. So certainly in Shas, both Al Pi Derech Halacha, Al Pi Derech HaMusar, Al Pi Derech HaShkafa, Lashon Hara is a major presence as one of the most significant concerns among Klal Yisrael. And it was codified by the Rambam. The Rambam in Hilchos Deis has half a parak about Lashon Hara, and Rabbeinu Yonah has significant talking about it as well in Shari Tshuva, and all the Rishonim and the Sugyas we just mentioned talk about Lashon Hara as a halachic matter. So why it's not a Shulchan Aruch is a separate question, but I don't think it's the case, the way it's sometimes understood, that the Chafetz Chaim is sometimes, you say, blamed, because it's usually phrased as a negative, for kind of inventing Lashon Hara as a halachic Sugya, that until the Chafetz Chaim came around, it was a Musari idea, and that he came and invented it as a halachic sugya. So I don't understand that, because, again, okay, it's on Shulchan Aruch, but before and after, it's certainly treated as a halachic topic with a lot of details to be paskened and to be figured out. And the Chafetz Chaim deserves tremendous credit for revolutionizing the world's attention, for making people realize that it's a halachic sugya, and for directing our focus to that, and therefore giving it a lot more attention and weight than it otherwise would have gotten. And we'll see that in the past 100 years, so many, many Svarim have been written discussing the Chafetz Chaim's writings. There are at least 6, 7, 8, 9, I have one shelf at home, a whole shelf of Svarim that are written specifically on the Chafetz Chaim. There's a lot of commentary, and they don't always agree with everything he says. There's definitely a lot of debate about points in the Chafetz Chaim. But he created a whole new attention to this, which is something that was very significant.
Is there a comparable area of halacha that we have?
It's a good question. This is probably the biggest, certainly the most successful redirection of focus, where Chofetz Chaim also wrote a very important sefer on Chesed, where he also gave that much more organized attention. We just finished Parshas Vayera. If you read Parshas Vayera together with the Avos Chesed, you have a whole new perspective on Parshas Vayera. Chofetz Chaim did a lot. In general, this was something that he directed his efforts towards helping us to recognize what may not otherwise get enough attention. So here, there is a lot that where our eyes are open to because of the Chafetz Chaim's focus. So we're grateful for that. And, you know, over the course of our discussions, hopefully we'll come to see, I think there's also a reason why this area of halacha has become one that, particularly in the past 100 years, there's an appreciation that it should be a focus that's different, a different level than a lot of other areas of halacha. You know, the constant idea of Shmiras Halashon, focus and constant study of Shmiras Halashon, and organizations that are focused on that, I think we'll see that there is a reason why this deserves more attention. That it has, in addition to complexity, it has a relevance to our lives in a very sweeping way. Maybe I'll discuss a little bit on Shabbos, maybe. And it comes up in the parsha also. It has a relevance to our lives in a way that is kind of all-encompassing and goes very much to our midos and to our practice. And that's something that is very fascinating to behold. So, okay, so it's in Shas, it's in the Rambam, it's in Rabbeinu Yonah, it's in the Rishonim, it's in the Svarim afterwards. What about in the Torah? So where do we have Shmiras HaLashon as a concept in the Torah. The words Lashon Hara do not appear in French. So where do we know from the Torah that there is a prohibition? Where does it come from? Anyone know? Sorry? So Miriam's a candidate, but there are other candidates that come first. Yeah. So the most likely source is the Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim of Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha. Now, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha, we have to figure out what exactly is its scope, what exactly is its meaning, but this is a Pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, which, not coincidentally, ends with the words Lo Samar Al Dam Riecha, and that's something that we also have to see what the relevance is. So this is very likely the most dominant possible source from the Chumash, again, not using the word Lashon Hara, the word Rechilus. We have to figure out exactly what it means. The Rishonim struggle, it doesn't have an obvious meaning, the word Rechilus. And if you look in various commentaries, you'll see a range of different translations. For lack of absolute confidence, what it means, we talk about it as a peddler. And the peddler is really symbolic of a talebearer, somebody who goes from place to place taking stories and coming from here to there saying, I heard this, I heard that, what have you heard? So that seems to be the imagery of the Rocha. But there are a couple of other possible sources. What else is in Chumash that may tell us about such a concept? So Lo Sisa She Mashav is another interesting possibility. We'll talk about that in a second. So that's also where Rashi and Parshas Kisavo tells us that that's the reference that when we have one of the klolos, Aror Makereyehu Basasa, that if you are cursed if you hit somebody in secret. So how do you hit somebody in secret? It's when you talk about him when he's not around. Relevant to a whole fascinating discussion, does it matter if he is around? That's something God willing we'll get to down the line. Maybe Purim time, we can aim things to get around there. That has some interesting implications. But that's also one of the sources. There's one that we're skipping. We'll discuss in a second, Lo Sisa Hashem Rishav. But there are also Chazal the Gemara in Maseches Ksubis talks about, Amotzi Hashem Ra, and the Gemara quotes a pasuk, V'nishmartem mikol dover ra, that we should protect ourselves from every bad thing. Normally, that's the literal translation. There is a Masorah sometimes in Chazal that Dover is understood as Dibur. So we should avoid, we should stay away from all Dibur Ra. And if that's the way Chazal read that Pasuk, that's the closest you get to the phrase Lashon Hara in the Torah. Dibur Ra, that's the closest that you maybe get. And that the Gemara in Ksubis associates with Motzi Shem Ra. We have to discuss in a second what are these terms. Now we've seen Rechilus, Lashon Hara, and Motzi Shem Ra. What do these terms mean? How exactly are they differentiated from each other, if they are, if they aren't? So that's something we'll have to discuss in a second. So we have Lo Seilech Racha, we have Nishmartem Mikol Dover Ra, we have Lo Sisa Shem Hashav. That's a pasuk in Parashas Mishpatim that is very instructive. That's something that we're going to have to spend a lot of time understanding. Because the Gemara in Maseches Pesachim quotes that pasuk and says that this could be a source for a prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. And then the Gemara goes on to say also maybe Lashon Hara itself, speaking Lashon Hara. So how do you translate the phrase Lo Sisa Shem Hashav? It's a hard phrase to translate. It's not obvious what those words mean. I want to take a stab at it. How would you translate those words? Lo Sisa, let's start with that. Right, you shouldn't uplift, you shouldn't bear, you shouldn't hold. There's a couple of different possible implications. Shema, a shema is a report. That is shav. What does shav mean? Unproductive is a good possibility. Right? You said sheker. So it's interesting. You would have thought unproductive or useless because we learn shvuas. Right? So we have a difference between a shvuas sheker and a shvuas shav. Somebody is going to take a shvuah that the sky is green, so maybe that's a shvuah sheker. Assuming the reason the terminology is shvuah correctly, but let's just say it for now. If somebody would take a shvuah that the sky is blue, that would be a shvuah shav, because who needs you to come to court and testify that the sky is blue? We know the sky is blue, it's not useful. So if the pasuk means do not accept a useless report, that would be enough. But it's interesting that the idea that it means sheker is one that is prominently on the page. If you're doing Shnei Mikra V'Yachad Targum, you see that that is what both Rashi and Unklus say. Now that's an interesting concept, because the Gemara is associating that with Lashon Hara, and we're often taught that Lashon Hara is true. So it's interesting that the Pasuk, which Chazal tell us is about Lashon Hara, uses the phrase Shema Shav, which great Rishonim and Mefarshim are telling us means sheker. So we have to see how to understand that. That'll probably be a topic for the future also. Now, in addition, your point about Miriam is very well taken. That here we have a lot that's both beneath the surface and above the surface. That we have a whole section of Torah, Tazria Mitzora, which is about Saras. And Saras, we have a Mitzora from Chazal that one of the main causes, Chazal tells us there are a number of causes for Saras, but that it is a spiritually caused malady. It comes from doing something wrong in Ruchnius. And the most prominent of a number of things is speaking badly about people. And Chazal tell us that Mitzora is a contraction of Motzi Shem Ra. So that, you could say, all right, but it's not explicit in Chumash, that's the Mitzora behind it, except in a sense that it is, because in Parshas Baloscha, it's very direct. Right? There, we're told that Miriam says something about her brother, we don't even know exactly what, but we understand that to be a typical Lashon Hara situation. There's a lot to discuss about that also. And we could time everything that it fits in the various parshiyos, and we'll have to see how we'll get the topics one at a time. But that idea that Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, so then her onesh of Saras is very closely linked in the Chumash itself. So that teaches us about Tazriyah Mitzorah, that the notion that Saras is caused by Lashon Hara is essentially explicit in Chumash, not in Tazria, but in Baal Osra, that we see the consequences for what happened to Miriam. And then to add more to that, that in Sefer Dvarim, so we have two psukim next to each other, which may also be relevant here, because we're told that there is a mitzvah to remember what happened to Miriam. And the Ramban writes in his commentary to Chumash that that's a mitzvah min HaTorah, and that he doesn't understand why the Rambam left it out, because that should be counted as one of the 613 mitzvahs to remember Miriam. And there he says, why do we have such a mitzvah? Big theme to discuss in the future, but for now, to keep us away from Lashon Hara. And right next to that, the Torah also says, Hishamer benegat saras. So what does it mean, be careful regarding saras? So it could be a couple of different things. The Gemara in Masech HaShabbos understands it to mean don't remove, person has a physical saras, he shouldn't cut it off. But some understand that that is actually a reference to don't catch saras in the first place. How do you make sure not to catch saras in the first place? So look at what happened to Miriam and learn a lesson. Don't say the kind of things that could get you in trouble with saras. That's perhaps the message. So we have a whole number of instances in the Torah before, again, getting into all the times where Chazal tell us that that's behind the story. Again, the Nachash and the Meraglim and so many other times in the Chumash where Lashon Hara is lurking behind the scenes as the Yetzer Hara, essentially. But just in terms of halachic context in Chumash, we have L'Sei Lech Rachel, and we have Nishmarta Mikol Dobara, we have L'Sei Sushem Meshav, and we have the whole concept of Tazria Mitzora and the Miriam connection, and Shukim telling us especially, remember Miriam, be careful about Saras, etc., etc. So there is a major, major focus placed on Lashon Hara throughout Chumash and Shas and Svarim afterwards. So practically speaking, what are the terms? So here, should also point out that there has been some evolution of the terms, because you may have learned in school that Lashon Hara refers to true statements, which again provokes one of the major challenges we're going to have to figure out, and I think we'll probably focus on this mostly maybe next time for part two. Why is there such a problem with saying things that are true? How do we relate to that? But that's the common understanding. Lashon Hara refers to things that are true. Motzi Shem Ra refers to things that are false. What's known in English legal terminology as slander, something that is untrue. And rechilus is something else. So rechilus is often understood as if I tell you what other people said about you. That's how it sounds like from the Rambam and the Chafetz Chaim. So these distinctions, lashon hara true, motzi shem ra false, rechilus telling people what was said about them, these distinctions are not clear from Shas. From the Gemara, it's not clear that it uses the terms in this way. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like most of this delineation starts with the Rambam. And the Stechemet and a few others have a hard time with how the Rambam got this, because it seems like it's not really substantiated in Shas itself, and that maybe the Rambam used these categories to make things more distinct for us nowadays, but in Talmudic language it doesn't perfectly fit. And you have to see others comment on this as well. There's a sefer on Midos, which goes to a lot of these Nidanim, also points out, it's called Orech Misharim, that also points out that it's not clear that this is the way the Talmud uses these words. It seems like it really starts with the Rambam, and then the Chafetz Chaim takes it from there. But in the Gemara, it seems like Lashon Hara is an umbrella term that refers to all of these things, and that Lashon Hara includes both true and false negative things. And there are those who understood it even more sharply than that. Maybe we'll see if we get to that. And that Motzi Shemra in the Gemara is used in a very specific context about somebody who accuses his wife of adultery, but that the usage of just that for anything slanderous is also a little bit of a later development. Rechilus also seems to be a umbrella term that we use for all of these things. Rechilus and Lashon Hara in Talmudic usage seems to be umbrella terminology. Again, the idea that Motzi Shemra is in the context of the false adulterous accusation which is described in the Torah, maybe that's how it comes to be associated with all false accusations, with all slander. It's possible. Rechilus, there is one statement in the Gemara which a little bit could be consistent with this. The Gemara says that if you ask a dayan, if you have, let's say, a din Torah where three dayanin dealt with your situation and you lost, and one of the dayanim who was in the minority, he voted for you and the other two outvoted him, if he is going to tell the losing candidate, the losing litigant, that, well, I voted for you, I was outvoted by the other two, that's considered to be rechilus. So that's a little bit comparable to the idea of, oh, this is what they were saying about you, so maybe this is where the distinction comes from. But again, it's not clear in the Talmud that these definitions are used the way they are in the Rambam and in the Chafetz Chaim. Even in the Rambam, it's not 100% clear, this definition of rechilus. It's the Kesef Mishnah who puts that in, that the Rambam says, the Rambam has four categories. And we should pay a little closer attention to how he delineates them. This is in the second half of the seventh parak of Hilchos Deos. The Rambam says that Lashon Hara is Hamagane es chavero, even in bedivrei emes. So you disparage people even with true things. Motzi shemra is things that are completely made up. And rechilus is you tell people what's being said. And the Kesef Mishnah adds there what's being said about them. It's not explicit in the Rambam that that's what he means. The assumption is that he's understanding. And here there's an interesting Ravid, which you can take a look at. But the assumption is that he's delineating a whole different area here. That Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra is about disparaging someone, is about hurting their reputation, while Rechilus is about starting fights. So you tell somebody that, oh, you know what he's saying about you, that's going to get people all riled up, and that's going to cause machlokas. And as later Sfarim point out, so presumably it'd be true, even if you're just reminding them of things that they forgot about. This is one of the many, many points which I think gets lost a little bit in contemporary discourse. There are things, this is part of what I hope we'll be able to see over the course of these discussions, that there are so many details in Hilchos Lashon Hara that get glossed over, and are humongously relevant to our lives. And if we just pay a little bit more attention to what's in the Svarim, we'll see how they have an impact. So this idea that Rechilus is about riling people up by saying, oh, this was said about you, that kind of effect happens all the time in contemporary discourse in ways that it never occurs to us, maybe Lashon Hara, maybe in the whole parsha of Lashon Hara. But a lot of the statements in the political world, but even just in our own lives, that are made to get people angry, especially when they're not justified and especially when they're not founded. So this very much brings us into the territory of Hilchos Lashon Hara. It's something that we have to be much more sensitive to. So the Rambam has these three categories, and then he has a fourth. And the fourth is one that's a phrase we don't find in the Gemara, but the Rambam brings this onto the discussion. That is a Baal Lashon Hara. And there he writes, somebody who is Yoshev and Kovei, somebody who sits and establishes himself as a regular speaker of Lashon Hara, that's a whole new madrega. And anyone wants to draw any parallels between people who are sitting at computers, see that as however it's relevant. But there is this fourth category the Rambam says is even more egregious than the first three. So where he gets that from is also a discussion. There are some who understand that what the Rambam is doing here with his fourth category is that in some cases we find in Chazal, we only touch the surface about what Chazal say about Lashon Hara, there are some statements that are very, very severe about speakers of Lashon Hara. And since we know that it seems like it's a very common Avera that all of us are subject to from time to time, the Gemara in Bava Basra says, V'kulan ba'avak Lashon Hara. All of us are subject to avak Lashon Hara. We didn't get today to talk at all about either avak Lashon Hara or really about Kabbalah Lashon Hara. These are topics that we'll have to get to. But if we're all subject to avak Lashon Hara, so it's hard to reconcile some of the more severe statements that you find in Shas about Lashon Hara with something that all of us do on a very frequent basis. Now, you could say, Nachanami, we're all in trouble and we all have to really work much harder, and that's also true, we have to work much harder. But to believe that every single one of us is subject to the very severe statements that the Gemara has is a little bit hard. So there are some who suggest that that's what drove the Rambam to say that there's a greater category, that the incidental Lashon Haras that we're guilty of as human beings, okay, that doesn't necessarily place us in the category that the Gemara has when it has these very strong statements. It's an Aveiru we have to chuba for. It's something we have to try to fix, to try to weed out. But it's not going to automatically put us in that kind of a category. But the type of person who is just a wanton Lashon Hara speaker, who has no inhibitions at all and does so with frequency and kvias and without any type of sensitivity to any concerns. So that's where the Rambam understands that all the severe statements apply to that person. That's this extra level, somebody who's really shakua of Lashon Hara. That's perhaps where these stronger statements come from. But the initial distinction between falsehood and truth, that's something which I guess is a good place for us to stop, because the introduction to what we'll continue with next time. Stay tuned for when next time is. It'll be, I guess, in a few weeks. But hopefully we'll explain a little bit this key question, because just to set it up, the relationship between truth and falsehood and the Isser Lashon Hara is a major issue. It's an issue that we need to figure out, because it troubles us. What exactly does it mean to say we can't say or we can't believe even things that are true? How do we reconcile that with simple common sense? What exactly does that mean? So that's something that we'll hopefully get a better understanding of. But for now, just to understand that the distinction between Lashon Hara and Motzi Shemra is not absolute, especially in the Gemara. And I don't think the Rambam meant it to be absolute either. So when the Rambam says, Amagana afilu b'divrei emes, so he means that you're disparaging a person. That's the nature of what Lashon Hara is. And that you're doing so through things that are essentially factual. Instead of, let's say, Motzi Shemra is complete fabrication. You'll say this guy robbed a bank when never did anything like that in his whole life. So, okay, that's maybe complete fabrication. But it doesn't mean to imply that Lashon Hara is 100% true. And that's, I think, an important point, because just to say Magana Filibidriamas means you're disparaging someone, including with factual elements, but it doesn't mean that what you're saying is 100% true, and it doesn't mean that it's objectively true, and it doesn't mean that it's fair. And those are all clues to what we need to try to understand in the nature of the issue of Lashon Hara. And sometimes you find, I think, this distinction gets taken a little bit too heavily by school children, because they take it that if you accuse somebody of speaking Lashon Hara, they take that as a confession. Oh, because Lashon Hara means true, and Motzi Shemra is false, so if it wasn't true, you would accuse me of speaking Motzi Shemra. So the fact that you said Lashon Hara means that you think it's true. So I think that that's, you'll forgive me, a little childish, that that's not what the distinction means, and that you can feel safe in accusing people of Lashon Hara and know that you're not endorsing the truth of the statement. That A, the distinction is not absolute, and B, I don't think the Rambam even means that. It means to say that Lashon Hara is a fully true statement, and part of the problem, as we'll see, is that Lashon Hara contains a lot of falsehood. And this, there are statements in the Gemara which are explicitly like this. The Gemara says that Lashon Hara only endures if there's a little bit of truth mixed in. There are statements that clearly use Lashon Hara as inclusive of false statements, if not totally false statements. So only mentioning this because I think it's a Pesach to help us to understand the whole next discussion, that we shouldn't take this distinction so rigidly to assume that an accusation of Lashon Hara is an endorsement of the content, and how exactly does that play out, and what impact does that have for how we relate to this topic. So God willing, we'll try to pick up with next time. Thank you very much for taking your time out during lunch. Hopefully this is a helpful first step, I hope. And any feedback is welcome. Dave, are you, you're going to give me a ball of feedback? Okay, so I thank you so much. I wish you all a wonderful day, free of any machlokes, lashon hara, bechilus, and such issues, and enjoy the rest of your lunch.